This is the Lane 9 podcast, a production of Lane 9 Project, which is a community focused on the intersection of running and disordered eating at all levels of sport. We share your stories, chat with practitioners and coaches, all while working on shifting the norms in sport toward healthier relationships with food, body, and movement. I'm Heather Kaplan, and I'm here today with Lane 9 Project co-founder Alexis Fairbanks.
Hi, Heather.
Hello. We're still like navigating how that intro is. I don't know. Okay. Hot take, podcast intro or no podcast intro. What are your thoughts?
I like the chaotic intro of Kara and Dez the best when they're like, what are we doing here? Because I feel like that's relatable.
Yes. I was just thinking like Allie on the Run has like a really standard intro, which is like more of a, I think that might be a product of having started her podcast in like 2017. Is that when she started it?
I don't know. It's been around for what feels like forever, though.
I obviously don't mean to speak for Allie, and I have no idea if that's true, but it feels like that was a really standard thing with podcasts of that era, because I also started a show in 2017 that I ran for 5 years. And then like Kara and Dez is like more of the new podcast style where it's like we're just jumping in, or like I listen to Believe in the Run and they're like, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run, this is Robbie with Believe in the Run, this is Megan with Believe in the Run, and like that's their intro. Like that's it.
I'm assuming you do listen to Maintenance Phase?
I've listened to a lot of their episodes, but not recently.
They took like a 6 month hiatus and just came back, but they always like make up a new tagline each episode for their show.
Yes, I remember that.
And I love enjoy that. It's a funny intro. Sometimes they really hit the mark and other times it's really ridiculous. And it's just a good way to laugh at it at the beginning.
Yeah, throw each other off. I like that. Okay, well, we're experimenting with an intro. Let us know, what are your hot takes? Podcast intro or no podcast intro? I feel like I fast forward through a lot of them. But if somebody is tuning in for the very first time, it might be helpful to have some context. TBD. I don't know. I have no idea. Anyways, we were supposed to record this yesterday, which means nothing to the folks who are listening, but it's Sunday and we usually record these, if we're recording them together, on a Saturday. And we didn't do that because I was horizontal most of yesterday. So yeah, that's how my day went.
Super fun. Talk to us about where you're at with half marathon training and being horizontal all day yesterday on a Saturday, which is, I believe, typically your long run day.
Typically.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, I actually switch up my long run a lot because it's usually on my schedule for Saturday, but my husband and I are both training for something right now, and both of our long runs tend to be on Saturdays, which is sometimes fine because he's more willing to get up early and just get going. And I, in this season of life, I think I've mentioned this, I am a lot more like slow going in the morning these days. Like I used to be a just get up and go person, but I'm not anymore. And that certainly is helped by this season. Like we're still in winter. So it's like, you know, take your time, wait for it to warm up. So we sometimes switch just so that we're not both totally wiped out on the same day. But I was supposed to do a long run yesterday. Instead, I was up at about 4 a.m. really nauseous and got sick, and then ended up sleeping most of the day. So that was a bummer. I mean, obviously I was not going to get a run in yesterday. There's no way that was happening. And then Mike made a comment about like, oh, well, since you're doing your long run today, like today as in Sunday. And I was like, I literally ate SpaghettiOs yesterday. Like I'm like not trying to go out and run a long run today. I might see if I can do a short run and just like make sure my body feels okay, but not trying to do anything wild. But I also somewhat more intentionally skipped my long run last weekend because I was traveling and I was visiting a friend. And I actually told my coach, Mary, I was like a little bit annoyed with myself because I'm like, I definitely could have gotten it in. Like there was time if I had like gotten up a little bit earlier and just got out the door before everybody was up and doing stuff, it was very possible. I just didn't. And then I like, it was kind of on my mind most of the day as we were like sightseeing and like walking around. And I'm like, oh, I really should have done my run. It's like such nice weather and all these other people are out running. And I put a comment in my training log that was just like a little bit annoyed with myself. I didn't do it, but like, whatever, you know, like the world doesn't end. My training is fine. Not knowing obviously that I was going to get sick this weekend. And she wrote back and was like, even though you're in a place that you know really well, and it maybe doesn't feel like vacation, it was still a vacation. So just like, go easy on yourself. It's not a big deal. You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's helpful, actually.
I find it so challenging, even when like, we will go back to the East Coast and stay with Tyler's family. And even that situation being like very relaxed and like we sleep in a nice bed and like there's nothing like preventing training, I always find it challenging. Usually I do it and I have my runs. They live in a super, super, super hilly neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So everything is like you're either going up or down. There's no part of the run that's just like flat. And yeah. So that's just such a huge mental barrier. And there's an area, a little park I'll drive to and do my long runs. But I have never in my life had like a halfway decent long run there. Every time, even since moving to Colorado, and then I like go and I'm at sea level and I think I'm going to feel good. And just, I don't know what it is. It's probably like a mental thing at this point, but yeah. It always feels terrible. And it's just something about being out of your routine, out of your own space that makes it so hard that even when you do get out, sometimes it just like doesn't feel right or good. And it's just,
yeah.
I always tell my own athletes, like when they're traveling or on vacation, like do what you can.
Yeah.
Don't stress about it. Like if you're visiting family or like on a vacation, that's the priority. Like none of us do this for a living. It's not our paycheck. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't get paid for this. We're doing it for fun. So if it's not fun, like let's prioritize the things that are important, and then we'll just get on back on track when things are back to normal, I think is like,
yeah,
an important outlook.
Yeah, exactly. It's sometimes hard to remember that for yourself, but it's always a little easier to say that to someone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is 2 weeks in a row of, you know, just chilling, not doing a long run, but I don't know.
It's a long taper.
It's such a long taper. It's going super well. I'm tapering so well right now. It's been great. How's your running going?
It's good. I had a long run yesterday with a little workout in it. It's nice because long runs right now compared to what they were a couple months ago, like going into a marathon, are so much shorter. And so it's like the perfect. Yesterday I did about 12, which to me is like the perfect long run distance because it's a distance that I consider like a true long run. Like I feel accomplished afterward, but I also have energy and it doesn't feel like I have to like take this huge chunk out of my day. Like it doesn't take that long. And so that's nice. And yesterday it was in the 30s here, but sunny. And you know, from living here that like 30s and sunny in Colorado is perfect running weather. It's gorgeous. Yeah. So it was just a really lovely run. I still don't really have anything on the calendar. I signed up for Boulder, which is a 10K here on Memorial Day, but I still haven't figured out what half marathon I want to run. So need to figure that out, put something on the calendar. But right now my training is kind of like just getting back to it. So it's not going to make a huge difference. Yeah. At this point, what I end up running. So,
okay, we have two pieces of homework for people listening. One, tell us how you feel about podcast intros, and two, what race should Alexis run this spring?
Yes.
What half marathon in or around the Colorado area? Willing to travel? How far?
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably travel because I want to run at sea level. So, it just kind of depends. The closer, the better, but that's the annoying thing about living here is just just not being able to like easily get to sea level to run a race. And if I want to run a fast time, I'm not going to do that here. So trying to figure out what would be kind of easy to travel to. And then timing wise, as I continue to not put anything on the calendar, it's like, okay, I gotta find something a little later now, but I don't want it to be too hot. Like,
Okay.
we'll see. Gotta figure it out soon.
I would say look at the schedule in Albuquerque, which is not sea level, but it's like 3,000 feet. So you get the benefit of dropping down, and it's like a 5-hour drive down I-25. And then you could look into like Kansas City, Lawrence area, which is more probably of a 6 or 7 hour drive or a short flight, but super flat for the most part.
All right,
somebody's listening in Kansas City and they're like, no, it's not flat. I don't know. I feel like in my experience in those areas, it's been pretty flat, but I could be wrong about that.
I feel like Kansas is flat.
Well, most of Kansas is flat. Yes. Yeah. That is like generally the trend is that Kansas is super flat. Yes. All right. Anyways, we'll see what the people say. Let's talk a little bit about just some of the stories going on in sports right now, in our sport at least, which is running. We have a lot to choose from. There were NCAA indoor championships. I'm correct. So like not versed in my NCAA language. I got to work on that. There were world championships, indoor track and field. There's this thing going on with Lululemon right now that we're all a little bit confused by, but we're watching it anyways, because it's all over Instagram. And we will talk to Stephanie Flippin, who is Alexis's coach on the Lift Run Perform team and also a sponsored runner in the trail space, who is there and I think leading a lot of the research that they're doing. So we'll talk to Stephanie in a couple weeks about that. But yeah, that's the other big thing I can think of that's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, we can just turn this podcast into a Nikki Hiltz fan club, I think.
Listen, I'm up for a rebrand if that's what we want to do.
They have just been killing it for so long at this point. I was listening to the Alley on the Run podcast, I think at like the end of December, and Alley had asked listeners like, what is the like running story of the year or something like that. And as I was listening and she asked that, my instant reaction in my head was like, well, Nikki Hiltz, obviously Nikki is the story. And Allie was kind of reading some of the listener responses, and then she got to like, and the number one listener response that I just kept hearing was just the year of Nikki. I think 2024 is going to be just another year of Nikki. What are your thoughts?
Oh, we're so here for it. I am so here for all of the years of Nikki. They were just back on Allie's show, so I guess this is also an Allie fan club.
Yeah.
Which, oh my gosh, side note, she's doing a live show in New York on Saturday, because I'll be there for the half next, like this coming Saturday. And it was like tickets go on sale at, I think it was 10 a.m. No, was it noon? Noon on Friday. And I was on it. Listen, Ann Arbor camp sign up has me trained to just like open the link 5 minutes before it goes live and be ready with your clicker and go. And I got tickets, but I refreshed it at 12:02 and it was unavailable.
It's like the Eras Tour, Allie's version.
Wild. I was like, Allie's next live show needs to be at Madison Square Garden, because clearly that's like the size of the crowd that we need to accommodate here. Anyways, so I was listening to Nikki's recent interview on Allie's show. Nikki's mom is on at the beginning,
so
which
cute.
Is incredibly wholesome.
Like, so cute. I
their
love
mom
it.
Sounds so amazing. We need like a Nikki's mom's text Substack or something.
Oh my gosh. Yes. We all need the inspirational quotes that she sends Nikki before races.
Yeah. And something they talked about, which I feel like has come up here and there, and maybe Nikki has talked about it as well on their Instagram and their socials, but just that I think kind of the magic that happens when, one, you obviously have a ton of talent. Two, you work really hard and you have for a long time, and it's an accumulation of years and years of training and competing. And three, like the pieces of your life that make the most, like that are most valuable to you fall into place in a really intentional way. I don't mean to say that like, oh, they just got so lucky, but like they are with a partner that feels like very affirming and loving, and like they're relationship with Emma, you know, has been a couple of years in the making, and they're obviously very public with their relationship. And it seems like, at least from what we can all tell, like they really support each other. Mm-hmm. And they made a move team-wise and I think coach-wise and location-wise in the last couple of years, and have also just in the last few years, like come out as trans and non-binary and gone public with their relationship and all these things that is like, they are living their life on their terms, and mm-hmm. we get to see that. And like, not to say that there aren't massive side effects to that in terms of, you know, vitriol and discrimination thrown their way online, because the internet is a freaking dumpster fire. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I feel like we're seeing just what can happen when, again, there's talent, there's years and years of hard work and competition and training. And there's a person who is like, these are the things that are really important to me, and I'm going to hold my boundaries, and I'm going to like do what feels best for me and find what works for me. And then we see kind of like what can really happen when all those things come together. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. As I remember, like the first time I heard of Nikki, of course, was again on Allie on the Run many years ago. I remember listening to probably the first time Nikki was on Allie's show, and I was doing a like 20-mile run in the humidity and heat of DC. I remember it was a miserable run, but I was like, ooh, this Nikki person's really cool. I'm going to follow them, and have kind of watched their journey. And it's been, if you've been watching from the beginning of Nikki's pro career, it's been a little bit of like a slow wind up. And then this mm-hmm. past year has just been like, again, the year of Nikki. And I've felt like it's just such a testament to watching somebody live as their truest self, and how that impacts like the athletic side of things, because it seems that they're able to just kind of let go of some of this weight that they've been carrying and just like be free and run and be who they are. And Nikki has also shared often, whether it's on different podcasts or in post-race interviews, it just seems like they're running for so much more than themselves. And just the whole trans non-binary community, they just seem to really feel like what they're doing as an athlete is just in service of others. And that's just really powerful as well. So I'm just excited. There's a few people that I am like, I want this person on an Olympic team. Kiera's one of them. Obviously she was not able to finish the marathon trials, but you know, I think she's going to come back in the 10K, and crossing my fingers for her. And then I know Nikki put on their bingo card to get that Olympic rings tattooed. And I would love to see that, because Team Nikki all the way.
Yeah, that collection of tattoos really needs an Olympic rings tattoo.
Yeah, absolutely. There
Although I really admire their commitment to non-meaningful tattoos. I'm like, you know, I think we need more of that. There's too much pressure on these tattoos. Yeah, would love to see Kiera make a team as well. Alafine Tulemak is another person that I was like really bummed. I feel like since 2020, she's just been having a hard time with like, you know, postpartum and training and injuries. And I'm like, oh, I'm really cheering for Alafine. And I feel like she has so much in her, and we're just not seeing it quite yet, but she keeps going for it. And we get to keep kind of seeing, you know, how that turns out for her and the ups and downs. But I don't know if she's a track or like, you know, shorter distance athlete. I don't know enough about her history in running to know that, but would love to see her maybe compete in the 10K too. Side note.
Yeah. She's just she's like such a bright light in the sport too. Mm-hmm. And just like, I love listening to her on podcasts and seeing her like Instagram captions. And she just seems like a cheerleader for all the other runners in the sport as well.
Yeah. So the other person that we've seen a lot about, or at least I have seen a lot about in my social media world, maybe you don't see this as much, that'd be interesting, is Elle St. Pierre mm-hmm. and her win at World Championship Indoors in the 3K, and kind of just like blowing folks out of the water. Like she just kicked it in and won. And the big story around that is or at least part of the story around that is that her kiddo is like, I think he turned one like the next day or something. Yeah. Right? So it's like, we are seeing this athlete perform at her best, like historically her personal best, and win a world title 1 year postpartum. And that is pretty unusual. Like, let's not say that's the norm. It's definitely not the norm. And that's how things are working out for her. And I feel like I have seen a lot of mixed reactions to that. I'm curious for you, as somebody who is not a parent and doesn't have that experience, but still sees the narrative playing out, like, how do you process that, I guess?
Yeah, I definitely have seen a lot about it on my social media and everything as well. Ellie is just, she's always been somebody that I've followed. You can tell she's somebody who works really hard, and knowing like her background, like she lives on a farm, her husband like works full-time as a farmer, you know she's gritty, right? And I think just being somebody who's like so immersed in the sport and following, and even though I don't have kids, like I followed like Kara Goucher's story and how she's talked openly about like wishing she didn't come back so quickly, and just lots of other women that have had different experiences coming back. And so when I first, like, with Ellie's story, I think it's so awesome to celebrate and support and understand that there are things behind the scenes that are allowing her to be able to get back there. And because we were talking about this a little bit offline before we started recording, but obviously not everyone is going to have that same experience. And the experience that we see is the success stories. And like for every Ellie, there's probably, you know, five more women who do not have that. And Ellie probably has, especially now, like with the knowledge that we have, I think the knowledge we have now versus when Kara Goucher had Colts is so much different and so much more available. So someone like Ellie probably has very different support getting back into running. And she's also, I'm sure she's running lots of miles, but she also runs a much shorter race than a marathon. And so that training looks different in terms of volume. I just think there's so many factors to be thinking about and to be like acknowledging when hearing her story. And it's not to take away anything from her or saying she's doing anything bad, because she's incredible and it's such an awesome story. And there's another side to things that we don't see. And for every like amazing Ellie story or Rachel Schneider doing big things, or I think Rachel Smith now doing big things postpartum, there's others who are probably struggling more, and we just don't see that.
That's the thing. I mean, we do see like quite a range of experiences, and this is obviously, we're speaking mostly to like the pro level, but I feel like definitely over the last few years, we've seen a huge shift in coming back a little bit later, taking a little bit more time off, doing pelvic floor physical therapy, you know, training in a different way, like not approaching training maybe the same way that you did pre-pregnancy, and also like the type of birth that you had, the type of support you had postpartum. Like, was your partner around? Did you have a nanny? Do you have family support? Like, or are you doing most of it? Like, the number of variables is truly endless. And I think that I was just looking up a couple of other folks that I know have had kids and come back really strong. Edna Kiplagat has at least two kids, I want to say, although they're much older now. Like, I think 9 and 13, maybe, if I'm reading that correctly. Like, we've seen a lot of high level folks in the last 10 years, like have kids, come back and do really well, but it's just usually a little bit of a longer timeline. Although I guess now that I'm saying that, like mostly what I'm thinking of is longer distance, you know, half marathon or marathon training level, like Molly Huddle more recently. But there is just this tendency to really like sensationalize and romanticize the parent who comes back and is winning gold at the world indoor championships 1 year postpartum. And I'm like, it's so thrilling as a parent and a non-parent to see that and to be like, wow, that's like freaking incredible. And I think just always having to remind ourselves, like, there's, like you said, so much going on behind the scenes that really makes that possible. Not the least of which is some genetics and talent, like, not absolutely the least of which, you know, like, we all just really respond differently. I mean, I know people who are like, my feet have never been the same size postpartum, or like, my rib cage has never been the same size, or my nose changed. Like, you know, it's just like, every body responds so differently to pregnancy. And then there's like all these challenges postpartum. So it's like both the media's tendency to take like one element of her story and run with it, and our kind of social and cultural tendency to do the same, instead of saying like, wow, there's so many factors here. Mm-hmm. And she was able to train and like do this. And that's pretty incredible. But that doesn't mean that all of us are going to feel amazing 1 year postpartum. And I guess like same goes for Nikki, like not all of us are going to feel amazing and run our best just because we're in a quote unquote healthy relationship, whatever that might mean, like seemingly, you know, mm-hmm. really supportive relationship, and we moved and we have a different coach. Like, that doesn't like translate to breaking records for everybody.
Yeah. And when you mentioned gold, so Ellie won the 3K and Nikki got silver in the 15. I don't think we even mentioned that. We were just like, oh, Nikki, let's Nikki's amazing. Like, be obsessed without mentioning what they just accomplished. But also, Nikki was seemingly quite ill.
Right. Yeah.
Also, another thing of like, there's another factor. Not all of us run well when we're ill. And even they mentioned that they weren't sure how they were going to feel that day, and that they like slept most of the day, felt pretty crappy. And then on their warm up, felt like, I can do this, I've got this. And kind of it played in a little bit to their race plan, it sounded like. But just, you know, all these factors that like all of our bodies respond differently, whether it's having a kid or just having an illness or like a life transition. I think sometimes we have the tendency to see what other people do and think, well, Nikki can win silver when they're sick, so I can go do my long run when I'm sick, or like I'm a wimp, or Ellie can win gold a year after having a baby, like I should be able to run my half marathon. Yeah. And that comparison game can be really, really dangerous because we just all have different bodies and we respond differently. And I just think that's really important to remember.
Yeah. I also just thought of how Sarah Hall talked a lot about how she historically doesn't run very well in heat and humidity, and who among us truly does? Like, but then you have like the Des or the Mollies of the world who are like, I kind of thrive when the conditions are a little bit off, and that like challenges my brain in a different way. And it kind of like kicks me into a different gear. Like, not all of us respond that way to when conditions are kind of crappy. Like, Des winning the Boston Marathon in 2018, when literally everyone else was like, what are we doing out here? Like, why are we running? Right. And some people dropping out from hypothermia, like their bodies just responded differently to the conditions on that day. And I remember moving here last summer. And like, even though I grew up in the Southwest with like very dry air and high altitude, I somehow just could never get running to feel good after 3 years in Colorado. Three years. And yes, other things were going on in my life, whatever, I like had a baby and was like postpartum. Like, it just never felt good to me. And then we move here in the summer and it's hot and humid and I'm like thriving. Like, I just felt so much better on every run here last summer than I did times 2 years that I was running in Colorado. And it doesn't make any sense to me, but like, altitude is not my thing. And then there are athletes that flock to high altitude towns to train and run, and like, they do really well. And it's just like, that was never going to be how I responded to altitude. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm the opposite, like heat and humidity just, it just kills me. And I'm one of the few people that on that day does one, like I set a PR that was then my PR for 6 years until Houston. I run well in poor conditions if they're like poor in the cold way.
But not in the hot way.
If it's hot and humid, like CIM was a perfect example. And that wasn't even like quote unquote that hot, but I just, it absolutely brutalized me.
It's warmer than what you were used to. I remember my half marathon PR for a very long time was from a race outside of DC on the C&O Canal. It was an out and back. Mm-hmm. It was early December. It was raining at the start and snowing when we were done. So the temperature dropped while we were running, so much so that it started snowing and the ground was covered in snow. Like the before and after pictures are so funny. And I ran with my running group at the time. And so I was seeing a lot of people I knew going back and forth, which was like a little mental boost of, because this was a really small race, maybe 200 people, maybe. Yeah. And so we mostly just were seeing each other on the course. My shoes were totally soaked. There were puddles everywhere, like the C&O Canal's gravel and dirt, right? And my mentality was, if I run slower, that's just the more amount of time that I'm in these conditions. But if I run a little bit faster, then I can be done. So like, I'm going to do that. But yeah, like not everybody would respond to that in that way. And I don't even know if I did a race today in those conditions, if that would be my, my mental response. But on that day, it seemed to be, I don't know.
Yeah. And thinking about just like, we all respond to different things, respond to different conditions. Another like big news story this week from NCAAs is Parker Balbi, who I don't know a ton, a lot. I don't, despite the fact that I was a collegiate athlete, I don't follow NCAA track and cross country quite as closely as I do the pro scene, but she won both the 3K and the 5K at indoor NCAAs. And she famously runs a few days a week. I believe she does a lot of cross training, but it's just a really interesting example of how we all find success for ourselves in different ways. She obviously has an insane amount of talent to allow her to do that. But it's just interesting, so often in the sport, we think that high mileage, high volume is always, always better. And that the only way to get better at, especially the distance races, and succeed is just to do more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good example of somebody who clearly knows that for whatever reason, that high volume, at least coming from running, is not what's going to work best for her and her body. And she clearly has supportive coaches who know how to navigate that and work through that. And it's just cool to see somebody having success in such a different way.
Yeah. I was thinking too of Jess Ton McLean, who came in fourth in the mm-hmm. Olympic trials and said in many interviews, I was running 70 miles a week, not 100, not 120, not 90, like 70 miles a week, which is still for most of us a lot. I mean, it's all relative, right? Like if you're putting her in the context of professional marathoners, she's on like the very low end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
If you're putting her in the context of quote unquote normal people who have jobs and train for marathons outside of their job, like she was doing, that's a lot. I can't really imagine like somehow fitting 70 miles into my week, but that was pretty unusual. And she had an incredible race and felt really strong and was able to finish passing people in the last mile. So yeah, I think maybe the more we're paying attention, for me at least, or the more that the coverage around the sport changes and increases, like Fast Women, the newsletter, is pretty much how I keep up with NCAAs. Like I wouldn't really otherwise pay that much attention, but between Fast Women and also Sidious Mag, like those are my kind of go-to mm-hmm. sources for NCAA track and field content and cross-country content. And I feel like that's the only reason I know the name Parker Balbi, but also like with social media and all these like new running outlets covering the sport, we have more information, we have more interviews, therefore we have more context for what each athlete is doing, which obviously can be good and bad, but it certainly adds to the mix of things that maybe we can put onto the picture of like, what does a talented or quote unquote good athlete do? And there's not one way to write that script.
Yeah, I think about Jess. The other like cool part about her story is she was a professional full-time runner, and it was when she stopped doing it full-time as her job that she had this success. And she's somebody who, like, kind of similar to Molly in 2020, like got all this press as if she like came out of nowhere. You know, she was a sponsored athlete for a while, but she just didn't find the same success. And she talked on a number of podcasts that I listened to her on, because she's been on like every podcast
recently.
Like
all of them. Yeah.
but she's talked about how like removing the pressure of being a pro and just learning to have fun with it again allowed her to have the success. So I think that's just a cool way to look at it. And then another person that I think about is, again, Kiera D'Amato, who like quit running after college and went on to have two kids and have her family. And then 6-7 years later, got back into it in 2016 or 2017. Didn't sign a pro contract until I think 2021, which
is, it that is long? Kind of
mind-blowing. I heard that on recently on a podcast. I didn't realize that she's only been pro for a few years, but is now one of absolutely the top names in the sport. Just so cool to see how, you know, her and Sarah Hall are like similar age, both mom.
Took some time off. Like,
one of them has been running straight for all these years. One of them took some time off, and there they are in the same place, yeah, and both being really successful. So very cool to see all those different stories.
Yeah. All right. So summary of this is everyone has different things that work for them. And it's cool to see athletes who have been around for a while still doing really well. It's certainly a testament to figuring out what works for them and sticking with that versus feeling like they have to do kind of whatever the norm is of the sport in this time, right? Like, it would be really easy for Parker Valby to be like, well, it's a lot more common now for athletes to be running X amount of miles per week and then excelling at the 5K, but I'm not going to do that because that doesn't work for me.
And if you saw the video that she said she was running 90 miles a week, keep watching, because it was
like,
a joke.
Maybe I did. I was like, no, Alexis, she said she's running 90 miles a week. And you're like, don't get your information from 3 seconds on the Instagram.
It's okay. My husband did the same thing. He was like, did you see that she started? I was like, no, she didn't. Just keep watching.
This is the problem with Instagram. We only, because if you share it to stories, you only get like the first 10 seconds.
Yep.
Got to watch the whole reel, people. I'm learning this. Okay, cool. thanks for listening. We can be found at lane9project.org, and our newsletter is lane9project.substack.com. And if you want to give us a little shout out or give us some love and support the show, you can leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. Or what's actually most helpful is to share it with a friend and say like, hey, maybe you'll enjoy this. Thanks for doing that. All right. Bye, Alexis.
Bye.